Today's episode of the Crack Podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. Whether you are starting a new business or launching a creative project, Squarespace gives you everything you need to make your next move into a reality, including a free domain. So start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter offer code CRACKED, that's us, to get 10% off your first purchase, plus, like I said, a free domain with the purchase of an annual plan. Thank you, Squarespace. We're also sponsored today by a little show called Silicon Valley from executive producers Mike Judge and Alex Berg. Hopefully I don't have to tell you about this. It's one of the funniest shows ever. But in case I do, the Emmy-nominated comedy series Silicon Valley returns for its fourth season this Sunday at 10 p.m. on HBO. This season changes in the air as the Pied Piper guys pursue their video chat app, Piper Chat. Join me in watching them fumble along the road to success in an attempt to leave their mark. That starts this Sunday, April 23rd at 10 p.m. on HBO. Hello, the internet, and welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name is Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked, and this week we're talking about movie ideas that are too awesome to get made. We'll either be tweaking existing movies or digging up completely face-melting true stories or unadapted novels or comics that Hollywood would have already adapted into movies if they had the balls. So, cool ideas for movies that aren't already movies. Pretty straightforward premise. So let's burn through a bunch of examples I didn't have time to get to before we get into the show. We recently published an article by Jacopo Della Quercia, one of our most prolific freelance writers, about shitty movies that had really good movies hidden inside them. For instance, the movie X-Men Origins Wolverine. Looks like it's sitting at 38% on Rotten Tomatoes, and even the positive reviews have glowing pull quotes such as, "You won't be upset you saw it," and, quote, "adequate," unquote. Those are two of the reviews with a little red tomato next to them. But it has this one sequence at the beginning where we watch Wolverine and his half-brother Sabretooth tear ass through history, like they're Mario in Invincible mode. They go from the American Civil War, I think, up through Vietnam, which would make for a great Netflix series, actually. Each season could cover a different time period, like Mad Men, or you could cut back and forth between time periods, like Lost. We make a similar argument about Will Smith and Charlize Theron in Hancock. They're two immortal superheroes who are in love with each other, but being together makes them lose their powers. That's a great movie right there, but the actual movie just like dashes that part of the premise off in like 10 seconds via voiceover. It's actually the same thing M. Night Shyamalan's Unbreakable did. Rather than using an awesome premise for a movie, it just tells us that awesome premise in a plot twist. But yeah, an interracial superhero couple who love each other and are also each other's kryptonite, who are repeatedly ripped apart by race and politics, and, you know, they just happen to be able to throw cannons across Civil War battlefields and shit like that. Moving on, the third Indiana Jones takes place before World War II, as the Nazis are just rising up. The fourth one skips ahead to well after World War II and spends the whole movie taunting us with allusions to all the awesome shit Indiana Jones did in World War II. Just make that the movie, you assholes. As far as true stories go, I talk about the guy who solved the JFK assassination during the show, but my runner-up for a true story that needs to be turned into a movie is Boss Tweed, basically the most corrupt politician in the history of the United States. He ran New York while it was being built, essentially. To give you an idea, he was put in charge of building the New York County Courthouse, and it took him 20 years to build. To put that in perspective, the Freedom Tower, which I believe is the tallest building in the United States, opened its doors 13 years after September 11th. Tweed's courthouse ended up costing nearly $180 million at the time, so $4.9 billion in today's dollars. The Freedom Tower's cost $3.8 billion. And the Freedom Tower is 1,800 feet and 104 stories tall. Whereas the courthouse, which is beautiful and everything's made of marble, but it's only 3 or 4 stories tall and costs more than we paid for the state of Alaska. By the way, if you're wondering why he put in the effort to make everything out of beautiful marble, he was an investor in the company he hired to supply the marble. And that was kind of the brilliance of his form of corruption. He just used every single aspect of a project to cheat people out of money. One time, a city committee member demanded an explanation as to why the work on the building was going so slow. And he had his print shop that he owned publish the report, and he charged the city $100,000 for it, which is $2.7 million in today's money. So yeah, he's an awesome character. I feel like the Coens would have a lot of fun with that sort of genius of assholery. We've talked before about how the Tarantino movie universe is all the same alternate timeline in which Jewish soldiers shot Hitler's face to pieces and a slave named Django rescued his wife from the Disneyland of slavery. Anyways, I want to see the Avengers of the Tarantino universe. We'd have like Jules and the Wolf from Pulp Fiction, the Bride and maybe Vivica A. Fox's daughter from Kill Bill. Maybe Alabama from True Romance and Mr. Blonde from Reservoir Dogs. He actually refers to her as having been his ex-girlfriend at one point, or having been his girlfriend, currently his ex-girlfriend. And maybe let's throw in Django and Broomhilda's great-great-grandson for good measure. And finally, this was the winning submission in a photoplasty contest about prequels too awesome to exist, by one of our users named Tetsu_Anaguma. And the idea is basically our most badass president faces off against our most badass action movie villain in Roosevelt vs. Predator. Subheader, the greatest hunter is the greatest prey. All right, that's plenty of that. On to more of that. I'll be back at the end for some footnotes. Talk to you then.
How's everybody doing tonight?
That good, huh? It's just the news is so sad, you guys. I didn't expect
that. Is that your opener?
Yeah. So my name's Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked, and welcome to this live episode of the Cracked Podcast / Live After Hours.
Sans Michael.
Yeah, I will be playing Michael tonight. How many of you guys are familiar with After Hours and the podcast? Did anyone just wander in here because they like comedy? And
one person, cool.
So things are going to be weird for you tonight. After Hours is a show where 4 of our finest writer performers sit in a diner and make amazing points about pop culture that are like suspiciously well thought out. And I am joined on stage by 3 of those cast members. Please give it up for Daniel O'Brien, Soren Bowie, and Katie Willard. So the subject.
You neglected to mention, Jack is the co-creator of After Hours, so I think that deserves.
Yes.
So the subject of this episode is movie ideas too awesome to get made. And you guys will have a chance to contribute your answers, so get your minds working. But yeah, basically, tweaks to existing movies. For instance, Gravity. Robert Downey Jr. was supposed to play the George Clooney character. That would have been way better, in my opinion. Robert Downey Jr. is like wildly competent and smart at technology. I would have been like blown away that he died in the movie, whereas like George Clooney seems like he got to space on handsomeness. They're just like, you're an astronaut.
Clooney never speaks about science in the movie. In Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr. is talking about jet propulsion technology and all of his like Iron Man stuff. I've seen it. In Gravity, whenever they cut to George Clooney and they're like, there's a problem with space. I've seen it. George Clooney is like, oh, did I ever tell you about the time that I got drunk in a bar and was handsome? And they're like, ah, oh, what an astronaut.
Well, I like how you're like, well, Robert Downey Jr., you know, knows science. And I was like, no, he's really good at playing that he right. knows science. I don't think Robert Downey Jr. is a scientist. Maybe a chemist, are we?
Oh, shit. Shots fired at 90s Robert Downey Jr. Another option is comic books or novels or other dope IP is a phrase that I'm going to be using.
He literally has been saying that backstage.
That
dope
we'd like
IP.
To see on the silver screen. IP stands for intellectual property, for those of you who are
for all you noobs.
Not from here in Hollywood. But yeah, just anything that you think should be turned into a movie that hasn't. We're going to talk about some generally cool, true stories that haven't been turned into movies. Katie's already thinking about her answer.
I've got a fun one.
And it's crazy. My answer will tell you who else shot John F. Kennedy. So no big deal. Not that I'm competitive, but does your answer do that?
Special shout out once again to the guy who came here for fun comedy.
And then we'll have some side questions. Let's start off with a side question, you guys. What story should get the People versus O.J. Simpson treatment next in your mind? I'll tell you what the next seasons are up top so you don't give those answers. Season 2 is Katrina for some reason.
No, wait, it's called True Crime, isn't it?
American Crime Story.
American
Katrina.
Crime Story. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because, like, I don't remember a trial for Katrina.
Right. No, I just don't know how they're going to do it. It seems very different.
And like, O.J. Simpson, that was a very compelling trial. Katrina, I know who did it.
Right. Yeah, and like, where's all the funny wigs and weird eyebrows going to come in? That was my favorite part about People
Right,
versus
Katrina
O.J.
doesn't have a best friend.
Right.
It's going to be really fun to watch the whole time.
Season 3 is Versace and Andrew Cunanan.
That's going to be really, really good.
And then season 4 is Clinton Lewinsky.
Ooh, ooh.
I don't know. I'm looking forward to that one.
That's the one that I thought was going to be their follow-up. I wasn't expecting
it should
Katrina.
Be.
I thought, yeah.
Yeah. So that's my answer. What's you guys' answer?
Wait, your answer is the one they're actually doing?
Yeah.
I'm the host, I get to do that shit.
Oh, well, good choice, Jack.
Jack gave 3 answers that are already in production. Cool. I think as someone who grew up in the 90s, I would like to see the Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan story dramatized in miniseries form. Yeah. Ooh, they
ooh.
Said. Because they
we got it. Ooh.
Because it's one of those things that, like, similar to O.J. Simpson, I just sort of, I was a witness on the periphery where I was a child, and I was like, hey, Mom, Nordberg is on TV. What's going on? Nordberg from The Naked Gun. What's happening? And my mom was like, he fucking killed that lady.
Allegedly. Oh,
and similarly with Harding and Kerrigan, it was just like this weird scandal that doesn't make sense to an 11-year-old or whatever I was at the time that I would love
It didn't make
FX.
Any sense to Nancy either. She's sat on the ground going, why me?
Why?
I'm just desperate for FX and Ryan Murphy to tell me what happened.
As bad as I felt for her, one of the worst SNL hosts of all time, Nancy Kerrigan.
Yeah, I know, and it really it threw me. Because like Wayne Gretzky was so fantastic. You think anyone on Ice Skates was suddenly going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Not so.
I think for me, for my what gets the true crime story treatment, is the Zanku chicken murders. Anybody aware
Real
of this?
Real local ref, yeah.
So you know Zanku Chicken, really tasty on Hollywood and Normandy, and they have various and sundry locations.
Everyone who's
Los
not
Angeles.
Living in Los Angeles listening to this can just check out.
Yeah.
Zanku Chicken is the jam. Anyway,
it's like Kenny Rogers Roasters for you people in the middle of the country. But,
except
but
without
like
Kenny
way,
Rogers
way,
at
way
all
better.
The only correlation is that there's chicken involved.
Yeah.
No, it's rotisserie,
it.
Isn't it?
Occasionally.
Okay, a rotisserie chicken. Right. So Zanku Chicken, the first one opened in Beirut, right? And in the 60s. And then in the 80s, the son of the guy who opened the first Zanku Chicken moved to the United States and opened the one on Normandy and Hollywood. Well, so what ended up happening was he decided he wanted a franchise. And his family was like, okay, well, we're going to own the original location and you can own any of the franchises. So anyways, that happens. Then some sort of like fight breaks out over ownership. Meanwhile, the guy gets like colon and brain cancer and is dying, and he reaches his peak and murders his mother and his sister and then kills himself?
I'm surprised you see that as his peak.
Well, at that point, point, the cancer
when he was fully realized, my body is ready.
Yeah. And then weren't you saying you had heard that the mom had burned his house down? That I didn't follow.
Yeah, Anna said that backstage. Ooh. And we can't ask her because she's in the audience, but let's just say it's true. I especially like...
No, but she said it backstage. Do we have a clip?
Yes. I especially like this one because it would kind of have to be a local production. So it would be like local cable access, which I feel like the best part about People versus O.J. Simpson was like... the like trashier parts, like the eyebrows.
What I love in the article, though, that I had read about the murders is that when he went to go murder his mother and his sister, he like came down the stairs in, they were like in a white linen suit that he hadn't worn in 20 years. And he descends the staircase and his wife is standing at the bottom and she's like, you're like dying. Like, how are you walk? Like, how'd you get the suit on and walk down? And he just got in his car and went and did it. They think it's because the cancer got to his brain.
He worked.
Ha 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 ha.
I'm nothing if not thorough. And morbid, and I like chicken, so I don't know.
Man, that must have been the best looking suit ever for that to be the thing you notice as your husband walks out the door.
Your dying
to
husband.
Kill
oh my God, that suit.
Oh my God. They come to you, they're like, he killed himself.
But did you see? Did you see? The suit?
Was he wearing the suit?
I think that was Nordstrom's rack.
Was amazing.
That fit him perfectly, though.
He's got an axe slung over his shoulders, like, honey, you look great. Is that all you have to say? That's your one note. All right.
Then
kill
he just
the
gets
world.
In his Buick and murders his family.
If I could do the next true crime, it would be. Is that what the show's called? True Crime?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Colon.
No, it's second time. No, it's American Crime Story, colon, Soren's Crime.
Yes. That's the one. I would do the Nairobi attacks, the terrorist attacks in Nairobi.
Were you waiting for like an applause break?
No,
for
I
that?
Think it was. I was going to say it was This American Life, but Radiolab did a podcast about it. But what happened was there was a terrorist attack in Nairobi in a mall called the Westgate Mall, I think. And everyone who was involved in that, there were a bunch of just hostages that were there that were being transferred from like floor to floor and everything. And they were saying that there was this rainbow coalition of terrorists and that there was one woman from Paris that they were all calling the Black Widow. And there were people from Russia, people from some African countries as well. And everyone who came out said that there were like 14 terrorists in there that right. they had seen.
And it was a Die Hard-esque thing where they were like in there with the terrorists for like a day, right?
Yeah, for a very
like
long time.
Long
and
time.
Yeah, and it wasn't like they were all rounded up. Some of them were just free. And
yeah,
like
they were just running around hiding from them.
In a giant mall. And then they came out, and the journalists were all outside watching people escape and talking to them as they came out and getting all their news from these people. About a week or so later, the local government, they'd called in everybody too. They called in all these other international police because they didn't know how to deal with this issue. And everybody came in, they looked at the tapes, and they came out and they said, okay, there were only, I think it was three terrorists, and that's it. All of them were from Nigeria, I think, and they killed all of them. And everybody who was there, who was a hostage there, was like, no, this is not the whole story.
That's not what
I
happened.
Saw 14 of them. Yeah, I saw a woman. Like I saw people changing costumes at certain points and doing like this inside man type thing where they were coming out with all of the hostages and saying, they're in there, get them. And nobody can agree on what actually happened here. And everybody who has then done studies about this or has tried to dig into the journalism behind it, they've watched the tapes because the government is very secretive about them, but they'll let few people watch them. They'll come out and they'll go, yeah, there's only three people. And everybody who was involved was like, no, they're lying to you. Everybody's lying to you. And it's a really weird, fascinating story. And no one knows quite what happened, I don't think. And that would be a fun one.
Wow. Yeah. That would just be...
I legitimately, my mouth was agape.
That would be a great movie. I feel like not enough silly wigs and bad eyebrows, but for that
There
series.
Were costume changes.
Yeah, that's true.
There's just no pleasing you. Do you think there are going to be a lot of funny wigs in the Katrina story?
No, that's why I don't like it. That's why I'm trying to get you guys to pitch other ones. Yeah, I think the Harding one would be amazing. I think that's a really good one because there's like class stuff there too that I didn't realize until I saw the 30 for 30. That's the other way you can tell it's good is the OJ thing had like an amazing 30 for 30 at the same time as the show, and the Harding-Kerrigan thing did too. But yeah, I didn't realize Harding was like... the from the streets figure skater. It was like, really?
Yeah, she practiced in a mall. Like,
yeah.
That's the only place she could practice. And really, all these people were around her watching at all times.
Like, if that had been an 80s movie, I wouldn't believe it, that there was like a poor figure skater. Like, that doesn't exist.
she was skating against Nancy for the rec center.
Yeah, right. It's one of those sounds. I mean, it's similar to where I grew up, Hazlitt, New Jersey. There's two ways out. Selling drugs, figure skating. Those are the two ways.
And you got out through figure skating?
Absolutely. Yeah. Do we have a clip?
Support for today's show comes from Squarespace. So much of what makes you successful, especially on the internet, is image. Whether you need a portfolio to showcase your work, a store to sell your products and services, or a blog to share your ideas, Squarespace gives you everything you need to look like an expert right from the start. Because that's what it's all about, looking like an expert. Image is everything. I just made that up myself. But yeah, any old dummy can put words on Tumblr, but when you have your own site with your own unique domain and it's designed with one of Squarespace's beautiful templates, people will just assume you know what you're doing. And there's no software to install, nothing to upgrade or patch ever. And also, your site will instantly scale to any sort of mobile device or browser, which is incredibly important. Like 90% of traffic now is on mobile. So start your free trial today with no credit card required at squarespace.com and enter offer code CRACKED to get 10% off your first purchase plus a free domain if you buy an annual plan. Again, that's squarespace.com and enter offer code CRACKED for 10% off your first purchase and a free domain. Guys, I have some extremely important food related questions for you. One, why do potato chips that crunch louder tend to just taste better somehow? Two, do restaurants make smaller sandwiches for women than men? And three, what can architects teach us about dumplings? These are not my questions, and I'm super intrigued now by the idea that restaurants make smaller sandwiches for women? That's weird. For answers to those questions and many more interesting questions, check out the Sporkful Food Podcast. This week, host Dan Pashman talks with comic and actor Kumail Nanjiani. Kumail explains why he thinks all Islamophobes should be forced to try Pakistani food. So, yeah, check out The Sporkful today on Stitcher or wherever you get podcasts. I want to talk about Independence Day, too.
I heard my mom gasp when you said Independence Day. My mom's in the audience right now. And I heard you said Independence Day, and she went,
two.
But then two, and then I...
Well, I don't want to talk about the one. I think Independence Day 2 could have been incredible if you changed literally everything about it. So, all right, first thing we need to agree on. Everyone's seen Aliens. Everyone thinks Aliens is great. So from now on, if you're making a sequel to a classic Alien movie, it needs to be offered to James Cameron first, before any other director, including whoever directed it the first time.
I mean, you're my boss, and you're forcing me to agree to that, so sure, yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah, Jack.
Roland Emmerich, they gave it to Roland Emmerich, and he basically like pulled an 80s sequel with it, where you like hit all the same beats, but like do it extreme. They were like, well, what did people like about the first one? The big alien ships. Let's make the ships bigger. And I was like, no, that wasn't what anyone wanted. So for James Cameron's ID4 Part 2, like all James Cameron sequels to other people's alien movies, it's a metaphor for Vietnam. Picks up immediately after the first one ends, and a bunch of alien motherships have just crashed to Earth around the globe, presumably crushing loads of innocent people, c'est la vie. We move past that quickly. So what do we know about the aliens? We've seen one of them get shot out of the sky in his weird alien fighter craft and survive. And he not only survives the crash landing, he survives getting punched in the face by Will Smith, absorbing a witty one-liner from Will Smith at the absolute peak of his powers, being cut in half on an operating table. And by survive, I mean, of course, that he hotwired a human brain and had a telepathic conversation with the president.
No peace.
Say it again.
No peace.
Right. So in the James Cameron-directed sequel, those motherships, obviously not all the aliens died when they crashed to Earth. So you have these huge city-sized motherships full of these badass aliens who have better technology than us, coming after us, but we're on our home turf. So we have worse technology, our home turf. They have better technology. Vietnam much, you guys?
Oh, that's why you want it to be Aliens. That's what Aliens was, basically like a Vietnam movie.
Yeah. But I feel like that would have been awesome.
And the thing is that the Independence Day 2 sort of buries that entire movie because we focus on America for the first Independence Day, and then we just sort of like peripherally check in with all the other continents. And we're just like, oh, and Australia, they took care of them too. Oh, good for them.
Yeah. It's pretty rough because they check in with everybody else, and it's like civilized country. Then they go to Africa in general, and it's a bunch of people jumping up and down with spears.
They have spears and no shirts.
And you're like, no, then, no.
It's the worst thing that's ever happened in a movie.
In Independence Day 2, Jeff Goldblum, he goes to
Jeffy Gold babies. To
Africa to check in with, there's like some new discovery that happened there. Something came alive suddenly. And we learned that there was all of these machete-carrying badasses who had been fighting aliens on the ground for 20 years in between movies. And Jeff's like, yeah, that seems cool. Where's the thing I need to get? And then the movie starts, and I'm like, no. What's this ground fight? What's this war with machetes versus aliens? Are we ever going to get that? No.
And was that just District 9? Is that...
Anyways, that's my pitch for James Cameron's ID4 Part 2. Vietnam Much, you guys, would be the subtitle.
Vietnam Much, you guys.
Are you open to notes on that?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I think if we're doing sequels, I'd want to see a Final Destination where now a lot of time has passed and now we're in an assisted living facility. And they all, like, they didn't get on the bus that was going to the zoo or whatever. And it crashed. And now you've got like 5 or 6 old people who are trying to figure out if death is actually following them or if they're just dying of natural causes. Because like they're not, usually it's the way that they all figure it out is they're all dying in order and everybody can kind of know who's next. And it's just a real problem because it keeps throwing them. That like one will just die out of turn. And it's like, I think it was just his time.
The accident that kills everybody could be like a 25-mile-per-hour like fender bender in the parking lot. They went peacefully, you guys.
Devotees of the website will remember that Soren's greatest fear is old people.
It's
touching him or trying to feed him something with their hands.
It's very true.
It's something, something that they made with their bare hands that I'm supposed to consume. Is
even like
so your
cookies,
favorite movie?
They just have like those translucent hands, like like a see-through fish.
And you just wish Hollywood was brave enough to slaughter a bunch of old people in front of you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Soren, even cookies? Like if a grandma type makes you cookies?
Yeah. I won't get into it completely, but I had to go help an old woman try and find her cat in her apartment one day when I was just walking by. And she tried to offer me food, and I ran away.
You're an interesting human, Soren.
That's amazing that you actually like get stopped on the street to like help people do things, like a fucking fireman.
Yeah, that was the best. So yeah. Also, that was the first thing out of her mouth was, "Thank God you're here."
If we're still doing sequels, I know they're doing a Toy Story 4, but I'm sure it won't be the one that I want.
Okay.
Because they've been, between Toy Story 1 and Toy Story 3, they've really grown up with me personally, because movies are all directed to me. And the first one was, you're a child, wouldn't it be fun if toys were real? And it was. And then the third one was, isn't it hard to grow up and isn't it sad and don't you have to accept your own mortality? And like... Yeah, I guess I'll go into the garbage fire. That's adulthood. But now it's even more the future, and I want to see what happens inevitably when the world finds out about toys, because there's either toys versus human war, or
that
toys civil rights story, which is also very fascinating.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about like either direction. Like we know that toys are real and they have feelings and they can love and can be loved, and people will fear them because they're essentially like timeless and immortal. But some will love them. We were talking about aliens. I had a Vasquez toy when I was a kid.
Oh, awesome.
If I could marry that, that would be fantastic. So if toys were alive, that solves a lot of problems for me. So if you're listening, Plastic Vasquez in my mom's house, and you're real, I'm here for you.
Mine was a Yogi, my little bear named Yogi, and it at one point...
Oh, like, weird.
The neck... No, but what's so funny is it was like not... Didn't even look like Yogi Bear. Like, it was just another bear in like a yellow dress with a bow, and at one point, the seam at the neck undid, and so it just had this gaping neck hole.
Oh, God.
For a while. We threw him away, right, Mom?
That's... There'll have to be an accounting for all the toys that have been not incinerated but thrown into dumps and things like that that are just sitting underneath piles of trash that can't move or anything.
Yeah.
Because now if you've got the civil rights, then you have to go dig all of them up.
Right. Well, Toy Story 3 showed you a garbage incinerator. That's the best case scenario for a toy because, yeah, being stuck for eternity in like a landfill with
under
your face just pressed against like a rotting banana peel forever.
Because plastic takes so long to decompose and it's just you up against some dirty diapers and that's the rest of your life.
Oh,
God.
Well, so...
I'm a dad, so that's what I think about a lot.
God, I've changed so many diapers this weekend. No, not my kids. Just
oh, yeah, Jack,
totally
Jack doesn't have a kid.
You could have, like, one of them get buried under a landfill, and then they, like, wake up and have to, like, tunnel their way out through, like, living garbage. That could be cool.
Or wouldn't it be neat if like, X-Men Apocalypse style, a toy from the 1600s, like, burrowed out and was like, oh, in the 1600s, toys and man lived side by side. Do you guys not do that anymore? Let's talk about this.
But then it's like some creepy doll, and they were like, no, 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 go away.
Like, no, you're haunted.
You're
get
too
out
weird
here.
Looking. Your eye is down. I don't. Your eye
is down. We would totally just kill all the weird looking ones. We'd be like, yeah, Woody, you can have like your civil rights, yep. But like not that way.
The spider one with the doll head, get it out of here.
Yeah.
The fishing pole with the Barbie legs. You're like, no, this is too weird.
The entire island of misfits, like, a Charlie in the box, fuck off. Yeah. You're not part of this.
Is it under their control whether they're animated or not? Are they freezing just consciously freezing? It's not like an automated reflex?
Yeah, because they haunt that poor little child who didn't think the toys were animate and was
actually dealing
with his anger in a very constructive and good way that wasn't killing cats or something like that until he realized they were all alive too.
And then he became a garbage man, right? Wasn't he in Toy
Story? A happy garbage man. Yeah, he found peace.
Good. He found peace, yeah.
Any other sequels anyone wants to pitch before we move on to Dope IP?
Dope IP.
I know, I'm sorry, you guys. Hot IP?
That's not better. Why would you think that was better?
Hot IP?
Piping hot IP? Soren, you had a really good one about the Irregulars.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why nobody's made a movie about this yet. There was a group of British spies who came to the U.S. in the late 1930s to try and get us to join World War II. And these spies were part of a branch that was so British. It was called the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. You know a lot of them because it was Ian Fleming who created James Bond. It was Roald Dahl, who you all read about. Noel Coward, who was a playwright and he was an actor. Leslie Howard, also an actor. And then Sir William Stevenson was the one who led everything. And he's the one who James Bond is based on. So there are all these guys who were involved in the arts and the humanities who came to the U.S. and their job was to just try and get into influential parties and things like that and find isolationists and try and convince them, try and sway them. And the majority way that they did it was that they would go find the wives of these men and just have sex with them. And then try and get the wife to try and convince them that, yeah, okay.
We could learn a lot from Noel Coward.
There's Roald Dahl in particular. He had sex with so many American women. There's a woman, Claire Booth Luce, who was a Republican congresswoman, but she was also the wife of the owner of Time. And he was a notorious isolationist, and so he was like a target. So he somehow Roald Dahl seduced this woman and then continually had sex with her. And then at a certain point was like, I want out. She wants too much sex. He has a quote that he gave back to what was the equivalent of M at MI6 that was, I'm all fucked out. He says, that goddamn woman has absolutely screwed me from one end of the room to the other for three goddamn nights. And England was like, yeah, keep doing it for England.
I love how you'd expect it to be the guy who James Bond was based on, but no, it's Roald Dahl.
It's, yeah, it's lanky Roald Dahl who looks just like the BFG. Like, and they did. I mean, they did a great job. At one point, they created... not just in the sexual category, just at being spies and trying to instigate the United States and trying incite some sort of eagerness to join the war. So what they did was they created a map of South America, and they called it, they said that it was this Nazi map that showed what the Nazis intended to do in South America, which went against what Hitler had already been saying, which was he doesn't have any intentions of leaving Europe and Northern Africa.
He's usually a man of his word. So.
Yeah, I'm sure he did have this plan, but this map was completely forged. And then somehow they slipped it into American intelligence, got it all the way to FDR, and FDR kept shaking it up in the air, trying to convince everyone this is why we needed to go to war. So they did great work, and obviously we joined. Although we got sort of a formal invitation from Japan, I guess.
Right, was Pearl Harbor their work? Was that... So they were... having sex with the wives and then getting them to convince... Okay.
To convince their husbands, yeah. I mean, they just sort of bypassed the fact that this woman was a Republican congresswoman. They thought, no, this man who owns Time is more important.
Right.
And she was less of an isolationist. She was more of a globalist. But her husband was so notoriously one that Winston Churchill was like, here's our list of people that you need to find and fuck their wives.
Right. I'm sure there's... I mean, I like that summation. I'm sure there's more nuance to it. I'm sure it's not just like stranger fucks woman and then it's like, honey, we should go to war.
Katie, how about you?
Oh, so the dope IP that I want to make into a movie.
Yes.
We're dope. Team
not,
dope IP
I'm
on this on this side of the
do
stage.
Not hit that.
I'll say it, but I'm not going to high five you about it. I love F. Scott Fitzgerald's short stories, and there is a short story called "The Diamond as Big as the Ritz." Has anybody read it? Okay, two
the
people
guy who
in
came
high
here for
school.
Comedy.
So, "The Diamond as Big as the Ritz." The story starts. This guy named John T. Unger is from a town called Hades in Mississippi, and he gets sent to this like really shishy boarding school in Boston. And he befriends this guy named Percy Washington, who's like very wealthy, right? Everybody there is pretty wealthy. Well, so cut fast forward to summer vacay. Percy's like, you should come to Montana with me in summer with my family. And so John's like, cool. So they start on this train trip and they go to the middle of nowhere in Montana. And this like fancy ass car picks them up from this very small train station. And as they're driving through across all this sprawling land, Percy's like, my father's the richest man in the world. And the guy's like, whatever. And
how did they write that? So I want to know. Like,
he said the jerking off motion.
Yeah, and then raised his hand in the air as if to say.
He threw it.
Yeah, yeah.
He threw it away, his leavings.
And it hit the lining of this very nice car. Apparently what happened is his like grandfather bought land in Montana and found a diamond mine. And so he like started selling diamonds or whatever. But then he discovered that the mountain on his land was actually one giant diamond. So the guy's like, fuck you, I don't believe you. And he was like, no, it's the truth. And so what he finds out is that it is true. And this guy has been controlling the supply of diamonds out because he knows that if he sells too many, then the value will go down and no one can ever know about this diamond, this mountain-sized diamond. So when he gets to their chateau on this mountain diamond place, he finds out that, A, the grandfather wrote a fake proclamation and told all the slaves that the South had won the Civil War, and so they still had slaves. They shot down any airplanes that flew overhead and kept the airmen as prisoners in a dungeon. And then at the end, John T. Unger finds out that they shoot anybody who comes there so that they won't tell the secret. So it's essentially him, like, he doesn't know that last bit until the end, but he's like, this house is ridiculous. That was what got me more than anything, the way they describe it. There's a bed that when you wake up, the bed rolls you into a bathtub full of warm water filled with bubbles. And then you have like amazing meals and all this beautiful stuff. And then, of course, John T. Unger falls in love with the sister. And then she has an Italian teacher who escapes and tells the government. And then it ends with just but there's just gunfire and air. And then they decide to blow the mountain up. And that's the end of it, and it's great.
Can't blow up a diamond dummy.
God.
I'm not the dummy. F. Scott Fitzgerald's the dummy.
That sounds like the most delightful Wes Anderson movie ever.
I think anybody should just honestly read. It's really weird. It is, because it's like he's trying to describe technology that doesn't exist, but like it's like seeing what's important to people in the 20s, like, yeah. what would be, like, so lavish, like a bed that rolls you into a bathtub.
I still want that.
I know, bathtub. I do, too. Yeah. I mean, great. I want a bathtub where, like, the water thingy that keeps it from overfilling doesn't keep the water here. So I have to keep scooting down to get my chest under, but my legs are out, and then scooting back up, and my chest is out, but my legs are under.
I mean, surely we've conquered that technology since the 20s.
We have pools. Mm.
Pools are cold. Oh, we have jacuzzis. Okay.
This episode of the Crack Podcast is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. Remember, help wanted signs. You guys, listen, kids, back in the day, employers would put a sign in their window if they were looking to hire employees. Sometimes they wanted all types of employees except for Irish people like me. No, I'm not that old. But it was a much simpler time. And now all you millennials with your newfangled internet machines and iDroids have made the whole process harder for old people like me. Now, if you're hiring, you have to post your job to multiple job boards and deal with endless emails and calls. But ZipRecruiter puts an end to all of that. ZipRecruiter posts to over 100 job boards with a single click, and all your candidates are organized in a simple, easy-to-use interface. And find out today why ZipRecruiter has been featured on Forbes, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and why it's been used by over 1 million businesses, which, as I always say, I didn't know there were that many businesses, because I'm a dumb person. Right now, you guys, my listeners, can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/cracked. That's ZipRecruiter.com/cracked to start posting your jobs for free.
I have a movie based on a story from the past that I've been trying to figure out as a film since I heard about it on the Dollop podcast. I want to do it as a comedy because it's so wacky, but it's impossible because it's so dark. It's about the people who invented the lobotomy. It was a couple of guys who heard about it from another guy in like the 1800s who was doing it on monkeys. And he was like, I did some shit into this monkey's brain and it's like different now. And a couple of guys read that and were like, what about humans? It was an actual brain surgeon, James Watts, and an actual buddy, Walter Freeman, that decided to start this lobotomy business where they would go to mental institutions. And it was a terrible time. It was like early 1900s where mental institutions were homes for anyone who could be considered a problem. And there are some people who like had legitimate problems, and there are some people who were just like, I don't think I need to be here, and I'm very loud about it. And
a lot of women who needed to get fucked, actually,
right,
to be honest.
And these two guys would show up and they were like, that person seems pretty loud and aggressive. Can I drill 6 holes in their brain and see what happens? And the doctors were like, yeah. So they did that. They went around drilling 6 holes and like a lot of them died. It's super sad. A lot of them died. Some of them got like what we imagine happens with a lobotomy where you sever a nerve in the brain where you just you seem happy, but you're just like mostly paralyzed. You can still move if someone like shepherds you around, but in general, you're just like incapacitated and like you seem happy about everything because you can't talk or express yourself in any noticeable way. And some people weirdly would get lobotomized and then like, nope, still angry. But they found a market for themselves doing these lobotomies, and the buddy, Freeman, decided that the lobotomies that they were doing, these 6 holes that get drilled in the head, it's like, this is a, I mean, I know I'm not a doctor or a brain guy, but I feel like we can do this faster. So he opened a drawer in his home and took out an ice pick, because that was the thing that he had, and he invented the ice pick lobotomy, where he just like put it through your eye, rooted around, and lobotomized you. And, like, did it out of his office for a while. And then watched, the doctor came in and was like, what the fuck are you doing? How long have you been doing this? And he's like, oh, a while. It's super quick. I, like, knock out, like, 5 of these in the morning. And so that partnership ended. And so should have the story. But instead, Freeman went on the road. And I'm not using that euphemistically. He got a van, which he called the Lobotomobile. And he went back and forth across the country doing lobotomies like a stage show. He would crank out 20 a day because he's like, line them up. Bonk, 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 bonk. And people were like, I'm different now. And it was a really, like, crazy... It's super dark. It's super sad. This guy, like, going around performing lobotomies. Some of them are successful. Some of them don't work at all. Some of them are fatal. There's one, like, really wacky story where he was performing a lobotomy, and someone was taking a picture for a magazine. He was like, "Are you taking a picture?" And he killed that person because he wanted to be, like, facing forward while the picture was being taken. And now everyone's waiting for justice, where this guy gets arrested or put in jail. He just, like, retired in, like, 1957, was like, "I think this is all behind me now. I'm done." It's so exhausting driving around the country all the time, driving my home ice pick into people's heads. I've lost the crowd, Jack.
How are you going to make that into a comedy?
Imagine.
Yeah, give me like a scene from it.
Yeah.
It's going to be comedic.
Put Sacha Baron Cohen is the guy, or Will Ferrell is the guy. How about that? And he's like, "Whoops." But he doesn't.
"I got to get my ice pick back, but it's in your brain."
It could be a great Coen Brothers, like, dark comedy, I feel like. Yeah.
What did he think he was doing? What did anyone... Why were people volunteering? They just thought that people were happier?
They thought people were happier, yeah. Because you take someone who is in an insane asylum and they're screaming, like an actual person who's, like, flipping out and they're knocking stuff over and they're soiling themselves and they can't get along with others. They're violent. And then you sever something in your brain that these doctors have decided this is the part that makes someone angry. Like, it wasn't just, like... They never thought, "I'm going to kill this person," or "I'm going to paralyze this person." They thought, based on whatever science they decided, this is the part of the brain in the frontal lobe that makes you angry and violent. So if I sever that, suddenly this person who was miserable and screaming a minute ago can sit through an entire play and, like, seem like they're engaged in it. Like, that's what they would do. They would take people to musicals and, like, "Oh, I mean, they were angry before, but now they just sat through an entire fucking 2 hours of My Fair Lady. And they didn't scream once." That's progress. That's a good thing.
It makes
sense. I mean, it's not. It's not me saying that. That's the past saying that.
No, we're editing this disclaimer out. But
fair.
Because it happened to, like, teenagers, too. Women who were deemed too libidinous.
God, man.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fuck. Do you know which one happened to Rose Kennedy? Do you know if she got an ice pick or a drill? The Kennedy sister? By the way, that's the thing that happened.
Yeah.
Sister of John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy. She was deemed to... She probably had mental illness or whatever, but they put her in a home and then they gave her a lobotomy.
I mean, she was too into boys, right?
Even if I knew...
Yeah, I think she was... But I think she was just generally, like, angry and upset, and they were like, "Why are you having emotions?" And then they put her in a home. I know, it's fucking terrible, guy.
But, like, that's what would happen to you if you were, like, a bad kid back then. Like, holy shit.
Alter your brain. I mean, there was so much about science that we just didn't know, and doctors were making it up at the time. And, like, I can't remember the name of the guy. Reply All did an article.
Or sometimes non-doctors were making it up.
Sometimes just, like, a doctor's friend.
Official doctor's friend.
There was Hixby, maybe? I can't remember his name. Reply All did a whole piece on it that was called Man of the People. That was a doctor who said he could cure impotence, and he was just cutting people open and throwing goat testicles into them. Not, like, tying them in or anything. Just, like, throwing goat testicles in and then sewing them up and being like, you don't have impotence anymore.
Yeah,
and people were either too embarrassed to come back or dead. And
right, they would either die or like he would do the procedure and be like, "That's the procedure that fixed it. Your dick working now?" And they'd be like,
"Uh-huh. Yeah.
just leave
working
me alone.
Overtime. Yeah. You got it."
Nobody's going to go to the papers with that one. Be like,
"Well, I couldn't get it up and then he put some goat testicles inside my body."
You were like, "He didn't even tie him in there or anything. That's not how medicine works." Or they don't like
tie
shit in there.
The way that I would have done it, if I had to be a surgeon for... If I just... My consciousness transferred into a surgeon, which I'm terrified of at all times.
I have that same nightmare.
It's so while they're in the middle of surgery, I would at least, like, try and make it look like I'm trying to connect shit. Because I know you can't just...
This one
you can't just take a liver out or something. Because there's, you know, cables.
Because they're...
Katie?
Anybody here know the story of J. Griffith? The man who bequeathed Griffith Park to the city of Los Angeles? Okay, so nobody. The dude was from Wales, and he came here and started writing about mining, like being a mining journalist, and then got to know so much that he decided to become like a miner and made just a crap load of money. And he was married to this woman named Christina. And at one point, they bought like 4,000 acres of Rancho Los Feliz, which is pretty much like the whole Griffith Park and then to the LA River. And they gifted, what was it, like 3,000 of those acres to LA as a Christmas present. They're like, here you go, like, enjoy this beautiful. And he's like, it's going to be used for recreation. This guy was a raging alcoholic and paranoid and delusional and crazy. And at one point, he was on vacation with his wife and they were staying in a hotel in Santa Monica. And he was Protestant and he was convinced that his Catholic wife was conspiring with the Pope to kill him.
He didn't happen to be drinking at this point.
Yes,
did he?
He was very so. You're kidding. He was wasted all the time. And so he had her get down on her knees and pointed a gun at her head to shoot her in the head. And at the last moment, she moved. And he shot her in the eye, right? So he blinded her, but she survived. So they go to trial for her attempted murder. And they plead, temporary alcoholic insanity, right? So he ends up getting 3 years in prison. She, meanwhile, applies for a divorce. And the judge granted this divorce, like in the teens, the judge granted this divorce in 4.5 minutes. It's the fastest divorce, like in Los Angeles history. The guy was like, yes, of course, please get away from this man. So, meanwhile, they're divorced. He gets out of prison, and he's like, I'm going to tour as like with the temperance movement to tell people the problem with alcohol. And he decides to gift, again, to the city of Los Angeles, a observatory and a amphitheater. And the city of L.A. is like, no. They're like, no, thank you.
Now we talk to your wife. We don't want any of this.
We don't want this. And he was like, but it's my second Christmas present. They're like, it's not cute anymore. Like, you're a monster. And then what ended up happening is when he died, he left the land to them and said, you're building an amphitheater and you're building an observatory because he's that much of an asshole.
And that's how he got the Griffith Park Observatory?
And the Greek Theater.
I like thinking that he was on his deathbed and he was like, come closer. Make sure they build that amphitheater.
He did. He was like, he just had it in his will. He was just that much of a dick. He's a crazy person. And also, his first name is the same as his last name, and I don't trust that. Right? Searhan is another example of that. No, that's not good.
You're not a fan of his?
No, I'm not. I'm not a fan of the man who assassinated Bobby Kennedy.
Dan, any other stories you want to tell?
Yeah, I could talk about lobotomies again. I feel like I can swing this. Did you know that some of them were children? No.
Were you gonna? You dropped a bomb earlier. Are you gonna tell us who shot JFK or what?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. We had a perfect segue. I was talking about Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah.
Get
shit
on it, man.
I know. Hey, speaking of Bobby Kennedy, Brett, you edit
yeah,
this
you
together.
Yeah, you can do that. Cut it.
Brett, leave everything. Of Bobby Kennedy. Leave everything, Brett. Thank you.
So there's this guy, Howard Donahue, who is a ballistics expert and like an incredible marksman. He's so great at shooting. When the Warren Commission needed to prove that someone could get off 3 shots and hit a moving target, they brought in 11 marksmen, and 10 of them were not able to get the shots off fast enough. He got the shots off fast enough with the same gun and hit the target each time. So he's like this incredible guy who's on CBS News for that, demonstrating his ability. While he's there just like kind of being the best gun guy in the country, that's what we're calling him,
yep,
he kind of gets interested in the Warren Commission report, and he starts realizing that the ballistics don't make any sense. He's an expert. He testifies in trials on where bullets go, so he knows how like each type of bullet will travel, you know, like if it hits someone versus if it misses. And I'm not a gun guy, so I didn't know like there's full metal jacket, which is like the only type of bullet that's legal in war because it doesn't like break apart when it hits you. And then there are the things in assault rifles that are spinning like incredibly fast, and when they hit you they like break apart and like terrifying things happen. They like tear you up. So anyways, he realizes that the first 2 shots that hit JFK were perfectly on line from coming from Oswald. The bullet behaved exactly like it should have coming from Oswald's rifle. It was a heavy, slow-moving bullet with a full metal jacket, so it stayed together, which is why the shot that struck JFK in the back and went through him also hit the guy in the front seat, because it was just like this heavy, slow-moving, but really hard to stop bullet. So the third shot, the one that is the gruesome headshot, doesn't behave like that. First of all, the trajectory makes no sense. because Oswald's up and to the back and
up it, and to the left, out,
right? And this side of his head comes off, and he realizes that it behaves like the fast moving, fast spinning type of assault rifle shot. So he tells these journalists that, and they report on it, like in the Dallas Morning Herald Star. And nobody pays attention. People are just like, eh, that's not as cool as if like Castro did it or if Russia did it or something. So he just goes back to sort of doing this investigation with this journalist whose name is Bonner Menninger. It's very close to Boner is his first name. I interviewed
him. I understand your interest in this story.
I legit think that like he ended up writing a book, and like I legit think that's part of the reason why people were just like, ah, look at his name.
Boner's got a theory.
So anyways.
Boner Theory is a good name for like a punk band. Sorry.
So anyways, for years, they don't know what happened. They just know that there should have been an assault rifle in this one spot. And then like these new photographs come out that are taken from in front of the motorcade. And you can see clearly coming from directly where the shot should have been coming from, a Secret Service agent holding an AR-15, the exact type of gun that he thought it should have been. So I immediately am like, conspiracy, LBJ, like, did this. And Donahue is like a gun guy. He knows that like firefights are really messy and like how often like people die from friendly fire. And so what he realizes happened is the two shots ring out from above and the cars slow down. And as the cars slow down, this Secret Service agent is standing up with his AR-15 and looking behind him, and then his car stops and he falls forward and he must have let out a shot. And so the whole reason there was a cover-up was to protect the Secret Service right. agent.
Oh my God.
And you just exposed that. And do we have a clip?
Yeah. His name is, which is admirable, and it's also, it makes a lot of sense of the things. First of all, Kennedy's brain went missing, which is very strange. Yeah. Because they had to clean up the fact that there were like all these pieces of the,
right, the
fragmented
right.
thing. RFK, when he got on the phone with the Secret Service at the hospital, eyewitnesses overheard him say, there's been an accident. The Secret Service agents say that to RFK. And they immediately like took his body to Washington, D.C. And then there's also this thing that, so LBJ, we had written about this thing on our site that the night of the assassination, LBJ was like walking around outside of the White House and a Secret Service agent like pulled a gun on him. But I think it was just LBJ knew what happened and was like, these fucking guys, like they're maniacs. And then like when you go back and look, he was literally saying to people like for 2 months after the assassination, I swear to God, one of these Secret Service agents is going to fuck up and like shoot me in the head. So there's like a lot of evidence that points to that. He wrote this in a book, and the conspiracy theory community, the people who are into JFK conspiracy theories, were just like, no, fuck that. They were like so mad about it yeah. because it's not the exciting like.
It's not sexy. There, it's right. so much more exciting if there's like a second gunman who is
Grassy
part of a
knolls.
Larger conspiracy. Yeah, or like
Those
a bullet
sexy.
That can bend through the wind.
Yeah,
it's not sexy for a panicked security guard to stumble and like lose a bullet, and everyone else just be like, he's probably gonna die anyway.
Yeah. Well. Conspiracy theories hinge so much on everything being intentional, and so
right.
much of what happens in any circumstance is not intentional. And
exactly.
Like, and so if you're any conspiracy theory that goes deep enough, it's always like, no, some very intentional things all had to fall into right. place for everybody, and everybody had to do their part, and all had to be timed exactly right, and all had to work. And that's just not the way things are.
Yeah.
So if he hadn't hit, if he hadn't shot,
so
JFK would have...
That's an interesting thing.
He would still be president today.
Well, no.
That's an interesting thing. The shot, the second, the one shot that Oswald hit him with actually severed his spine. And so he would have been a vegetable if the third shot hadn't happened. So the guy didn't end up really killing him, essentially.
Put him out of what would have been misery for the rest of his life.
Yeah. And they went and like tried to tell the guy that, and he was not cooperative, which... It's totally understandable.
Yep.
Who should
away.
Direct that movie? Who do you think? Sinbad?
Is he even directing? Is that something?
I mean, he could. He's due for a comeback, I think.
There's a really manipulative way to make the movie where when they realize that there was a shot coming from behind them, but they haven't seen the Secret Service agent yet, you like really dig into all the conspiracies, and Ron Howard would direct that. Like a very manipulative, like sort of beautiful mind where he like thinks he's being chased.
Yeah, or like,
it's like, nah, he's just crazy.
The Mystic River version of this movie where you keep thinking there's some vast conspiracy and then it turns out it was like some dumb kids doing a prank who got caught up in something.
Yeah. And also, the JFK conspiracy theory community is just, they make the best villains. Because I interviewed the guy, Bonner Menninger, and I interviewed the key JFK conspiracy theory guy, like the number one guy. He has, if you Google JFK conspiracy theory, he has the website. And he's this journalist who used to work for the Washington Post. And he's just so full of shit. And like, when I asked him about this theory, he was like, it's a silly theory and you gotta get it out of your head. And I was like, but okay, so let's talk about like why you think it's silly. And he's like, Jack, I will not talk about it. I will not. And I was like, what? Well, why? Like, that doesn't make any fucking sense.
You gotta get that silly thing out of your head so
right,
I can fill
exactly.
it with more garbage.
Yeah. I was like, okay, so what do you think happened? And then he was just like throwing out all this stuff about the CIA and brainwashing and like impossible things.
Get your head out of the clouds, Jack. It was time travel.
Anyways, I think that'd be a good movie. We have a little bit of time if anybody has ideas
time for
movies.
If you guys want to come up to the mic and pitch movies that we will take, and if we sell them, you will not get credit for
that's
them.
Our hot IP.
That's ours. This is
that suddenly becomes our hot IP.
Yeah. That's our hot IP.
I can run through sort of a lightning round of things that were almost cool. That Russell Crowe Robin Hood movie was originally something called Nottingham that starred the sheriff of Nottingham as a crime solver in... As the sheriff. The sheriff in... He's the good guy in it. Robin Hood is an asshole, played by Russell Crowe, so it would have been perfect. And it's like a whodunit kind of crime caper that takes place in Robin Hood era. And Russell Crowe came in and was like, no, this needs more Robin Hood and less Sheriff of Nottingham. And it was like the most famous script in Hollywood for a couple of years, the Nottingham one, because it was like such a cool idea. And they turned it into that shitty Ridley Scott, Russell Crowe, Robin Hood movie. By the way, which who the fuck needs another Robin Hood movie, you might be asking yourself. There are currently 7 Robin Hood movies in production, I swear to God.
Jack,
that's
7. That's not totally true. He is saying 7 because there are 7 like mainstream Robin Hood movies. One of them is leading to an extended Robin Hood universe, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So there are actually technically 13 Robin Hood related movies in the works currently.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. Hi, sorry.
We have some folks.
Yeah, we have
pitch
some
us
brave
movies
folks
that we can own. Hi.
Hi. So this movie is like a kid's movie. It was my favorite book as a kid because I'm super wholesome and amazing. And
what's your name, by the way?
Kiara.
Kiara.
Hi. Nice to meet you. So it's a kid's movie about a girl in 1805 living in England, and she's an orphan on the street, which is like super happy, like Oliver Twist, but sadder because she lives in a hole under a bridge. And her gang leader...
Just being under the bridge wasn't enough? It was like, no, get in the hole.
Yeah. So the gang leader, who protects all of them and keeps their little gang together, gets like his head smashed in by a guy who sells bodies to doctors.
Kids movie.
Yeah. It's a YA novel. You can find it in the children's section of your library. Check it out.
What's the book called?
Bloody Jack.
Oh my God. Yes. That was my nickname and something.
Yeah. So so this girl is like, well, fuck this. I hate being an orphan in London. And she runs away and decides to join the Navy, which was totally a thing. They used to take young kids and have them, you know, run the powder to the cannons during fights. So she couldn't do that as a girl, though, because, like, girls are shit. Mm-hmm. So she disguised herself as a boy and cut off all her hair and went with the name Jack, hence the Bloody
Jack thing.
Good choice.
Good call.
So she's in the Navy, and she has adventures, and there's pirates and, like, attempted rape. And it's all...
Good times.
Yeah, and it's all, you know, tied up in a nice little happy ending. And it's part of a series, so, like, there's further adventures that go from there.
Ooh. Yeah, that's some good IP.
That's great.
Extended universe.
Good.
Thank you very much, Kiara.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's good.
It occurs to me right now, this is something that I hadn't thought about, but I think in my mind, I had assumed every child in England for 200 years was an orphan. Like, that's like, I think I just like legitimately assumed that British children start as orphans and then you're 13 and it's like, now you're one of the Poppins or whatever.
Right. Anyone read the Redwall books?
Yeah. Badgers, badgers, badgers.
Yeah. Well, now that they have the ability to like do whatever that shit they did in Jungle Book is, I feel like a Redwall movie is now going to happen.
I'm down.
Cool.
Hi.
Hi.
You're up.
What's your name?
Lindley.
Lindley.
Hi, Lindley.
Okay, two things. Number one, the Tonya Harding thing is actually happening with Margot Robbie.
Am I the producer of it?
You should be.
All right.
Okay, you are. It's yours. My plot's really short. I just think it would be really awesome to see the first 48 hours before they sign the U.S. Constitution from the perspective of a barkeep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great idea because they got shit-faced.
They got just fucking bananas. They threw toilets. Like, they got charged a ton of money for breaking all their toilets. Like, that would just be
the
awesome.
The forefathers were essentially the Who in a hotel room.
No, they really were, yeah.
Yeah, we always forget when Benjamin Franklin drove a car into a pool.
Car?
That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lindley.
Better than any of mine. We will be developing that into... Hey.
You guys ever seen How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying? The musical?
Yeah. Yeah. With the John Stamos one or the Daniel Radcliffe one?
The Daniel Radcliffe one.
Okay.
So...
with Matthew Broderick one.
I want to see... if you know in the first Star Wars movie, you see Luke Skywalker...
The John Stamos one?
Luke Skywalker wants to work in the academy. Well, goes to the academy. So it'd be really hilarious to see if instead of Obi-Wan comes and like, yeah, you're the one, blah, blah, blah. Instead, a how to succeed in business without you trying with Luke Skywalker trying to get to be like the Sith Lord, find out his Sith Lord's a father, and like how to deal with all that shit.
Just like Luke Skywalker conning his way up the ranks.
Yes.
Well, that would be fun.
Right?
That's a good idea.
Thank you.
Soren's wheels are turning.
I'm looking at him.
There's a lot that I want to do now. Because you still see the rebellion happening just peripherally, but it's not important to the story at all.
The guy just cares about his career.
Yeah.
Just
and
imagine.
Then there's like that Hello Darkness, My Old Friend playing over the Death Star exploding, and him just being like, I was almost at the top.
No.
Awesome.
And that's my idea.
Thank you.
That's a good idea, man.
Oh, John Paul.
John Paul.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Hi. Hey.
Hi. My name's Rose.
Hi, Rose.
So I think there's like a lacking in the genre of like historical like ghost stuff, but that's not a horror movie, like more frighteners type stuff. I don't think there's enough of that being made. And I think the like truce kind of story of the whole Sarah Winchester House stuff needs to happen. So like, if you don't know, like the Winchester House in San Jose, this woman was the widow of this Winchester that made like the Winchester rifle that like killed everyone in the 1800s. Her husband's father and her husband and her baby all died within like 5 years of each other from like this curse. And so she believed that like if she didn't stop using the money to build this house, the ghosts of the people that were killed with the rifle would kill her. And so you can actually go to this house in San Jose and it's like 200 rooms or something, and there's like all these secret passageways and doors that lead to nowhere and trap doors and shit. And like they just found a room in like 2015 that they didn't know existed in the house.
Was it full of ghosts?
So
I think the real pitch here is that crazy people should build more houses.
Right. So I think it would make a good movie, not necessarily like a horror movie, but just like this story of this woman that's like continuously building this house and like follow her through her life. Like there's only like one picture of her in existence. Like she's a crazy person. But this whole story of her house and her life, I think would make a fun, like all these ghosts coming after her, but she keeps building and so they can't really kill her, you know?
Right, just go sitting there, sitting coughing like, could using a West Wing here if you want to like build out that corridor over there.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, there are like stairwells that go into like ceilings, right?
Yeah.
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 You start to realize that the ghosts are the only one who can actually use any of the stuff in the
right.
house.
Like, no door, no problem. Yeah. Woo.
Ooh, maybe that's what she was doing, was like building it to the specifications of whatever ghosts were talking to her in her head.
She'd build a jacuzzi and then like wall it off so no one else can get in there, unless they could perchance go through walls.
You should build a bed that rolls into a bathtub.
I see you reading that story as a child and being like, oh, God. Ooh, this is my YA.
Yeah.
This is,
Thanks,
Rose.
Thanks, Rose. That was great. Hey, how do we feel about the fact that all of our audience's pitches are so much better than ours?
Maybe I wasn't really clear with mine.
I think that's all the time we have.
Is that all the time we have? Okay.
That is all the time we have.
But really briefly...
We're not doing the lobotomy movie.
We're not doing the lobotomy movie, but yeah. Soren had something prepared he wanted to say. Soren?
Just reach for the stars in your life. I mean, really like...
Thank you guys very much for coming out.
Thank you guys so much.
All right, that was our episode, you guys. That was a lot of fun. The live shows are always a lot of fun. You should come out to the next one. Hope you heard some ideas you liked in there, and also that you are a successful filmmaker or producer with the ability to greenlight big money pictures, baby. We won't sue you if you steal one of those, unless it's one of mine, in which case I demand nothing short of story buy credit. But yeah, Winchester would be a good show or movie. There are just some good answers there from our audience. The After Hours audience always brings it. Actually, Engineer Brett informs me that Winchester is going to be a movie, so people have already heard this episode and are acting on our brilliant ideas. It's going to star Helen Mirren, apparently. So you are welcome, America. All right, on to some footnotes. We're going to link off to an article by the LA Times called "Zanku Chicken's Tragic Family Rift Impedes Chain's Growth," about the source material for Katie's incredible true story about the murder chicken family. We'll link off to the Radiolab podcast about the Nairobi terror attacks in the mall. It's an episode called Outside Westgate. We're going to link off to a book by Janet Conant called The Irregulars, Roald Dahl and the British Spy Ring in Wartime Washington. And we're going to link off to the Amazon link to the book The Diamond as Big as the Ritz by this young upstart fella, F. Scott Fitzgerald, that I hear so much about these days. Yeah, that sounds like a completely bonkers plot for an F. Scott Fitzgerald novel, or novella, I guess it is. We'll link off to the dollop about the lobotomy and to an LA Times article called "Colonel Griffith, J. Griffith, One of LA's More Colorful Figures," because the LA Times apparently likes understatement in their titles. And then we're going to link off to the Amazon link for Bunnar Menninger's Mortal Error, The Shot That Killed JFK. There's also a documentary called JFK, The Smoking Gun, that seems to make the same claim from a couple years back, but I think it follows a different investigator who arrives at the same conclusion. Speaking of arriving at that conclusion, I'm not the only person who believes this theory. There's this guy, Bill James, who you might not know if you're not a sports fan, but he invented the current metrics movement in baseball and just sports in general. So he invented this idea where he like figured out that certain stats in baseball were undervalued while working as a night guard at a pork and beans factory in Lawrence, Kansas, just like watching Red Sox games on his little portable TV and reading everything he could get his eyes on. Anyways, baseball isn't his true passion. His real passion is true crime, and he's read every account of the JFK assassination, and he came to the conclusion that Donahue's theory is the only one that makes any sense. And he wrote about it, and I found out about Donahue's theory in a book called True Crime, that also didn't sell that well, even though it's a fantastic read and contains a lot of counterintuitive truths in it. Anyways, we'll link off to that book, True Crime, and to a New Yorker interview with him on the 5th anniversary of True Crime's release, where he briefly touches on the JFK theory and other unpopular theories he's had about popular crimes. And we'll link off to a Cracked article called Insane What-If Scenarios That Almost Changed Everything, which tells the story of LBJ walking on his property the night of Kennedy's assassination and a Secret Service agent pulling an automatic weapon on him and how Johnson turned bone white as all the blood drained from his face, which makes sense if Johnson knows a Secret Service agent had just accidentally shot the president earlier that day and he's the president now. And we'll link to a New York Times article where LBJ is quoted the same year as the JFK assassination, complaining that the Secret Service, quote, "Do everything except kill you," he said. "They don't know how to operate their guns," end quote. Also, in the aftermath of the assassination, he asked that the number of Secret Service agents be reduced rather than increased. Which, weird request. If Kennedy got shot by a third party and the Secret Service's only failure was blocking the bullets, weird that the next president would be like, "I want fewer of those guys." All right, moving on from that theory, which I'm obsessed with, we'll link off to a book by L.A. Meyer called Bloody Jack. We'll link to the first Redwall book, which I think is just called Redwall by Brian Jacques. And finally, we'll link to the Smithsonian Magazine article called The Heiress to a Gun Empire Built a Mansion Forever Haunted by the Blood Money That Built It, which is about Boss Tweed. No, obviously it's about the Winchester House. And that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thanks to Engineer Brett, as always, for engineering the live show and for putting this episode together. You can follow him at Brett, R-A-D-E-R, on Twitter. You can follow me at Jack_O-B-R-I-E-N. And we'll be back next week with more podcasts. Talk to you guys then. Thanks again to HBO and Silicon Valley for sponsoring today's episode. It's always amazing when really cool products sponsor our show, and this is a really cool product. It's been lauded as one of the top comedies on television. Silicon Valley, which has been nominated for Emmys, in case that's the sort of thing that impresses you, is returning for its fourth season this Sunday night on HBO. Join the Pied Piper crew as they fumble along the road to success in an attempt to leave their mark. That's this Sunday, April 23rd, 10 p.m. only on HBO. Home box office.
Hi, I'm Chris Gethard, and I'm the host of a show called In Your Dreams.
I had a dream that I was in my basement, and I very enthusiastically cut off my left hand.
Alongside my very good friend and dream analyst, Gary Richardson. This was a show where we started off, we said we're going to analyze dreams. We said people could call in, let us know about their dreams, and we'd break them down.
When I do have dreams, I call them like reality mares.
That dream made me want to throw up. That was disgusting. But I'll say, pretty much right out of the gate, things got a little crazy.
What are we doing? What the hell is this?
You're going to put a fucking mattress ahead of our friendship?
Find out what went down. Walk into the heart of darkness with us. It's like my personal apocalypse now. Listen to In Your Dreams, very kindly presented by the folks at Casper. It's only on Earwolf. It's one of the things I'm most proud of. Comedically, I think it's pretty strange, pretty funny, and I think you will enjoy it. Thanks so much.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.